I love him. Brownie, of course, over at Duke. The Duke women, UConn put it on them a couple weeks ago, and then Notre Dame put it on Duke. But before we bring Brownie in here and talk about tonight's women's final, which is, boy, you talk about a game that's going to have struggle to get some eyeballs on the TV. I say tonight's game's going to struggle to get some eyeballs. Coach Brown, of course, grew up in Indiana. Has to really appreciate, played at Purdue, has to really appreciate the unbelievable story for Butler. 2 years in a row, in any era, to get to the finals in the NCAA tourney. Coach, first of all, good morning to you, Coach Al Brown. You of the Greek Unorthodox Church. Anybody who's ever seen this offswing knows what I'm talking about. How you doing?
Tony, I am doing great. I am excited to be on the air with you today and to talk with all our friends in Knoxville. And it's always super to talk basketball, and it's just a thrill to be involved with you at any place, any time, except on the golf course, where you always get on me about my golf swing. But other than your wife, there is only one golfer in your family.
Coach Al Brown joining us on the program, keeping me honest today as he usually does. Yeah, it's really an awful thing to lose to somebody with a golf swing like yours. As we visit today with Coach Brown on the program. In fact, your golf swing is to golf what Butler is offensively to basketball.
Totally.
Now, I would like you to say it any better.
That's great.
Give me your alleged opinion on what we saw last night.
It was a horrendous display of offense by both teams. You can credit some defensive ability on both ends of the floor. Certainly both teams do play outstanding defense, but that doesn't account for the ridiculous score that we witnessed last night. I mean, there were plenty of good shots that were missed. Butler hits 19%. It was just a really weak display of basketball. And when you have a final score of 53-41, you're going back to the 40s when basketball first started the tournament, before you get consistent scores like that. But let me say this before we jump off the deep end on this particular game. In 1980, Louisville defeated UCLA 59-54, and North Carolina State won in 83, 54-52 over Houston. So we have had scores of comparable elk in the past. It's just it has been since 1983 since we've seen such low scores. And the average score in the men's tournament since 1960 has been about 75 points a game, somewhere in that vicinity. So it certainly was a drop-off, and it certainly was not, other than trying to get to the finish, certainly wasn't entertaining.
You know, what's really interesting to me is the way we have a media that just overreacts to everything, when the truth is, if you really stop to look at it, college basketball right now isn't what it once was, and it hasn't been for several years. If you were to, and I was talking on my blog today, if you were to take a team from the late 70s or the early 80s and throw it on a floor with either one of those two teams, or even the Duke team last year that won the national championship, they'd get run. Five slam a jam of those teams, those Georgetown teams, those great North Carolina teams, even that NC State team, to some degree, would destroy either one of those two teams that played last night. First of all, do you agree with that? Secondly, what's happened here? Is the one-and-done thing really, and the rating of the sport by NBA basketball, really devalued the game that much? Because this year, at times, on the men's side, was unwatchable, absolutely unwatchable. The level of basketball that we saw.
Tony, I think without question that's had a significant impact on the game. The point we often talk about in that regard is the guys that are going to the NBA. But what I haven't seen run statistically would be the number of guys who declare for the draft who aren't in the NBA, the guys who don't make it, and then don't go back to college because they've already committed to an agent and they're trying to at least go overseas or play in the NBDL. So, there's a significant drop in the level of talent in college at this point in time. And yes, occasionally you get teams, as you mentioned, Duke's team last year was certainly a very formidable team. North Carolina in 2009 was outstanding. Billy Donovan's teams were. I mean, you can go on back and chronicle all those teams, but if you go back to the Wooden era, for example, the 10 national championships that he won, his team, I mean, you could put both those teams together last night and they wouldn't come within, and this is, of course, a wild statement, but they wouldn't come within 20 or 30 points of Wooden's great teams. So there has been a decline. There is a drop-off.
I'm talking about those teams weren't even in the class of the level of basketball that we're seeing now. So here's my question for you. How do you get it back? If you were advising the college game, how do you get it back?
Well, first of all, one thing you do is institute the three and out rule. So they have to go to college for at least 3 years before they're eligible, or they have to at least be out of high school 3 years before they're eligible for the NBA draft. And that would help significantly. That's about the only way that you could stem this particular situation. And if you don't, I tell you, as much as we like to think, or we don't even think about the NBDL, there are a lot of good players in that league, and that league is catching on in the pockets where the games are being played, like minor league baseball. And if that takes off, which I'm not saying that it will, like college certainly, but if it takes off, there will be even fewer players that are going to college. So I don't know, Tony, other than the three and out rule, that's about the only way I can see that you could possibly help it.
It is unbelievable to me how wide open that deal is. And people want to get on Butler for being there last night, for being in the wrong place, the right wrong time, and this and that. The Butler deal, that was just a... That game could have happened in the middle of the season. I mean, you've been around the sport a long time. You have games like that, right?
Right.
That's all that was. That was an aberration, fluke game. They couldn't throw it in the ocean. And the funny thing about that game, and talk about the mental aspect of this, Coach, if you would, when you get past a certain point, it just shows you, even at a great level, how important confidence is. Those kids just... They all of them got sucked into whatever that was, that the rising current of just being swallowed up by the inability to convert even the easiest of shots.
Well, exactly, and speaks to the point of making 8 out of 14 free throws, which also contributed to their downfall. But they fell into the trap, and I don't think they could avoid it, meaning Butler, of shooting three-point shots. They shot 33 three-point shots last night. You can't win at any level in basketball with a three-point shot. Does it contribute to a win? Yes, it can. But the game is won, whether it's the NBA, women's basketball, men's basketball, college, high school, whatever. It's one in the lane. It's one at the free throw line. And Butler was not able to make. They only made 3 2-point shots. So they take the Connecticut, for example. They're 1 for 11 from three. So they didn't light it up from three. But they won in the lane, and they won at the free throw line where they hit 14 out of 16.
Coach Al Brown joining us on the show. Coach Brown, we talk about what we saw last night in this three-and-done role, which is a similar model to what baseball does. In other words, what we're saying is you have the option at a high school to sign. If you don't sign, then you're in school for 3 years, no questions asked, it's over. I don't understand why basketball at both levels don't do this, because when we had kids staying in school, at least to a junior year way back when, you had the college game producing stars for the NBA game. You had Jimmer Fredette every year. You had must-see players playing every year. And then after your junior year, you go. It makes the NBA a better product. It makes college basketball a better product. It really makes basketball at every level better, because then kids that are in high school have to prepare for a completely higher level of basketball going forward. To me, it is a no-brainer. Why isn't this done already? What am I missing?
I don't know the politics involved with it, Tony, but you mentioned all of these players. Think about Carmelo Anthony, who was at Syracuse for 1 year, but think about him being there for three. LeBron James actually even going to college, what that does for the college game and the school that he might select. You project those thoughts. I mean, yes, we mentioned the baseball rule where you could sign out of high school, and LeBron probably would have, but I'm just saying there are a lot of players who would enhance the college game, and as you suggest, through maturity, through staying in school and a chance to get their degree. With one year, you have really no chance to get your degree unless you're just super dedicated. At least a chance to get a degree. It's just good for everybody. I can't see a downside of that myself.
That's the fifth today with Brownie on the show. Alex, are you out in the parking lot or are you here?
I'm just watching the show from the window, the third floor window here.
We're having a fire in the building, and Alex has decided, Coach, to stay around. I'm over here at Poncho's, but on South Knoxville, down on Chapman Highway, God's Country, USA. And Alex has decided that he's going to stay in while the fire trucks are putting out a fire in the building. He's a trusting soul, Coach Brown.
Yes, he is, and hopefully he'll be rewarded by you in some great capacity.
I agree with that.
You say that facetiously, Coach, as if you know my procedure on rewarding people.
I'm not familiar with it, Tony, but I would guess the way you pay off your golf bets, I can imagine what it might be.
Ronnie, let's talk about the inside of the inside here. Jim Calhoun, how do you view him? Is he a thug I view him? I view him as a guy who Reggie Lewis had a coke habit. He let it slide. Reggie Lewis ended up dying in the end. I don't fault Jim Calhoun for what happened with Reggie Lewis, mind you. But I'm just keeping it real here. They've really glossed over that with the press. They've turned him into some kind of sympathetic, grandfatherly figure who's involved in all these charities. And the truth about Jim Calhoun is he's an NBA thug. I mean, he's an NCAA thug. He's known as a thug in that game. Am I lying?
Oh, no, you're not. Now, a couple things in regard to Jim Calhoun. I know Jim and have known him for several years. Jim is a wonderful guy to be around and a wonderful guy to know. That has nothing to do with what you're talking about in terms of the basketball side of it. I thought, Tony, one of the interesting and fun thoughts from last night was Gene Smith, the AD at Ohio State, who's the chairman of the basketball committee, is handing Jim Calhoun,
Connecticut,
the championship trophy. There's something in there that just I found very interesting.
I absolutely love you because you tell the truth. And there's Gene Smith sitting there who's got, in your mind, what happened at Ohio State in football and what happened here with Bruce Pearl? What's worse?
You mean one or the other?
Yeah, choose one. If you had to say Ohio State.
I think they're so similar, Tony, that it's very difficult to choose one over the other. initially, of course, Tressel didn't lie to anybody. He didn't forward information to the appropriate authorities, and then says he didn't know who to forward it to, which is interesting. And then I don't know, somewhere along the chain of events may have lied as well. I think they're so similar that it will be interesting to see how the NCAA ferrets it out and it meets out whatever punishment they decide to administer.
As we visit today on the program with the great Al Brown on the program, there's no way that guy's going to keep his job. But you're so right last night about the riches, the richness of all this. Cross sports here in the women's game. Geno, and do you think Geno last night was cheering for UConn to win the national championship?
That's a good question. They have had, he and Calhoun have had an ongoing, an ongoing relationship which has had its highs and lows. I don't know where they are on that scale right now. I would guess from what I, what I'm privy to, he probably was, he was hopeful at Calhoun. And at least the players would have a successful evening. I think it makes it very tough on his ego to go back now. And when they were the prohibitive favorites in many people's minds, meaning the UConn women, to win a national championship, they don't do it. The UConn men were lucky in some respects to be in the tournament and then win it. On that ongoing ego battle, Calhoun gets the upper hand this year. I think Geno, knowing him a little bit, will struggle with that, but probably pulling for the guys.
You like him, Coach? You like Geno?
I do. I tell you, if you put him in the right context, if you don't take him seriously, if you just understand what a lot of his conversation is about, yes, he's fine. He doesn't speak very highly of me in his book, but that's okay.
Coach,
he sucks. Him even including me.
Coach, he sucks. Just say it. Geno sucks. He's the worst.
He is horrible, Al.
You
got to be honest.
He is such a tool bag.
Well, come on, you're among friends here. Nobody gonna say anything. Then I'm gonna take your clips and post them to my internet site later on and flag them. Well, of course I am. I mean, tell us, this guy really does suck. I mean, let's face it. Tell the truth.
Well, you have to give. No, I think that's just a reaction to some of the comments he makes. Look what he's done. He took, if anybody's been to Storrs, Connecticut, for heaven's sakes, whether it's men's basketball or women's or football for that matter, who wants to go to Storrs, Connecticut and spend 4 years going to school? Well, folks in Connecticut, sure, and it's a good school. But from Hartford, Connecticut out there, there's even a two-lane highway going into it. You have to give those gentlemen credit to be able to recruit and build championship programs at Storrs, Connecticut. I mean, you have to give them all the credit in the world. And whether you like some of the comments they make or some of the reaction they have or some of the things they do, they still have to have the credit for not only bringing talent to Storrs, Connecticut, but also producing championship teams.
What's the inside on him and Pat Summitt? Do they dislike each other?
I you would have to ask both of them. I think, of course, it's pretty well known that Coach Summitt was upset with the recruiting of Maya Moore and how it was handled, and that started the rift between the two. I think probably down the road I'm sure they respect each other immensely, and I would guess down the road they will probably have another series, which would be certainly good for women's basketball.
Are they going to get back, you think? You think the Lady Vols?
I would guess so. I mean, I've heard some comments that Coach Summitt's made that she might consider that in the future, and I think certainly Coach Auriemma would welcome it. At least he seemed like he would at one point in time. Now that he's lost Maya Moore, he might not be as anxious to, but he seemed to be receptive to it.
Was that a mistake Pat Summitt made in doing that for the Lady Vol brand?
I can't say it's a mistake, but it's how you feel and what you want to do. I will say this. I've likened it to this, Tony. Okay, let's say the Yankees and the Red Sox, because they don't like each other this year, aren't going to play. Well, what's that do to baseball? I mean, it doesn't enhance the sport at all. That series enhanced the sport of women's basketball. It brought attention to the sport. They were the two most visible. They are the two most visible figures in the sport, and they both had championship teams. So in that regard, it really affected the game overall, not just between Tennessee and Connecticut, but the entire women's basketball was hurt by it.
Coach Brown joining us today on the show. Coach, tonight's national championship game, what do you think?
Tony, it goes back to 2005 when Michigan State played Baylor for the national championship. Two unlikely teams playing that year. Of course, LSU was with the ghost. Simone Augustus was the hot team in Indianapolis, as well as Tennessee. The Lady Vols were super, and both lost in the semifinal round. And you found Michigan State and Baylor in the championship, and everybody said, "Well, what in the world is this?" And, of course, Baylor won it. And this is a very similar outcome as well. Nobody expected A&M or certainly Notre Dame to be there, and they both arrived. I think the lateness of the hour that they're putting the game on, the fact that these two teams and their, particularly A&M, their limited fan base nationally, Notre Dame will have a little more attractive fan base nationally, will probably produce a very low number in terms of ratings, but it should be a very competitive game.
This A&M coach looks like a real veteran guy. Tell me about him.
One of the best coaches in women's basketball, Tony. I watched him. He was at Arkansas when I was at Tennessee. I saw him coach in the SEC tournament, a game against Vanderbilt. That was as well coached a basketball game in women's basketball that as I have seen. Timeouts, substitutions, offensive and defensive strategy was absolutely, to my eye, flawless. He's done a great, he went into A&M, a job that nobody really wanted, and now he's become the dominant team in the state. And I say that not only because of the success he's had this year, and one would say, well, Baylor probably, no. He's got Kelsey Bone, the number one player in the country, sitting out this year, transfer from South Carolina. They're going to be just as good next year as they are this year. So they will be the number one team in Texas. And he's just done, he and his staff done a terrific job of building the program and then taking it to this level.
A&M cut it down tonight, Coach?
I say they will, and the reason is Danielle Adams. She has not played great in the last few games. She had 16 the other night, but she hasn't been as good as she could be. Their guards can match with Diggins of Notre Dame, and I take them out of the game where Notre Dame can't match up, and that's with Danielle Adams. So, to me, A&M will negate the effectiveness of the perimeter, Novacell and Diggins from Notre Dame, and Notre Dame will not be able to handle Adams inside.
Coach, I don't know if you talked about this before I got in here or not. What are your thoughts on the Konzo Martin hire at Tennessee, being a Purdue guy?
Well, there's nothing wrong with Purdue people. I certainly applaud them for that. I really like Purdue grads. But Konzo Martin, when I was at Minnesota with Clem Haskins, we recruited Konzo Martin. And had a home visit with he and his mother, and got to know him then. And later he, of course, elected to go to, he elected not to sign with anybody, out of high school. He went to prep school and then from there on signed with Purdue and the rest is history. But, outstanding player, real tough, hard-nosed player. He's done, he worked with Gene Katie at Purdue, and Gene is a master of toughness and everything else that goes with it and developing teams. And then he went out on his own at Missouri State and has done an outstanding job. So, I think it's a very solid hire.
Is he ready, Coach?
Well, I think, Tony, only time will tell, and I think the interesting thing that you, you look at here, look at North Carolina State. North Carolina State can't get anybody to take their job, and so you say, well, Tennessee might have had other options they should have explored. Okay, that might be something that you could talk about, but North Carolina State's explored a lot of options, and they can't seem to find anybody that thinks that job's attractive right now. And Konzo Martin felt that it was a good fit for him. What I'm saying is you could look around a lot and not find a more qualified or a better coach than Konzo Martin because apparently North Carolina State can't find one. And they're comparable jobs. I mean, North Carolina State and Tennessee, basketball-wise, they're comparable.
The Tennessee opening, the Missouri opening, and the Arkansas opening. How would you rank those openings?
That's a great question. Missouri, since Norm Sloan has had questionable success, I know the guy that's going to Arkansas,
Anderson,
was okay. I guess I now repeat that it was you said Arkansas, Missouri, and
Missouri, Tennessee, and NC State. Rank those four openings.
And Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech.
And Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech is not a good job because the city of Atlanta doesn't embrace Georgia Tech, nor do they follow the sports there except for football.
Thank you very much. What a horrible sports town.
Right. Well, overall, Tony, we've talked about it in the past. The Braves, the Falcons, I mean, they have trouble turning out for the pro teams. I would rate, I suppose I'm biased to a degree, but I would rate Tennessee first, Missouri second, and the reason in both cases, they're state schools and they're dominant in their state. And North Carolina State third because they've had past basketball success, and Georgia Tech fourth. I think the North Carolina State job's a very tough job. I can see why people back away from it because do you want to be right in the middle of Duke and North Carolina with Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski there? That's a tough one.
Coach, you said something that's interesting to me that I sort of missed on your bio. You were with Clem back in the day. Did your paths cross with Bruce Pearl back in the day when he was an assistant?
Yes, they did, Tony.
I was at
Minnesota when the Pearl incident all came down with Deion Thomas and everything that went on with Jimmy Collins and that whole thing. In fact, it was interesting how it all developed. Knight's the one that got it all started. He just didn't want to be involved in it. He looked around to try to find somebody that would help him. He went to Digger. Of course, LaFonso Ellis had come, was one that Illinois had recruited that went to Notre Dame, and he tried to find out how Illinois had recruited LaFonso Ellis, and Digger was a good friend of Knight's, and so they shared information, and then he looked around the league, and everybody didn't like Lou Henson, so he found Coach Pearl working at Iowa through the head coach there, and that's how all that kind of started. And
so he basically masterminded that whole thing with Pearl, you think?
Was I on the ground floor? Was I sitting in an office? No. But to the best of my information, at that point in time, having been in the middle of recruiting Deion Thomas ourselves, and knowing Jimmy Collins and what I heard from him, that was the way the story came out to me. Am I swearing that that's exactly everything that happened? I cannot do that, but I can also, I can only relate what I heard and how it came down.
How does Bobby Knight keep his name out of that all these years? Just the power of Bobby Knight with the way he blows
well,
the press?
Yeah, no, not necessarily. See, he was the one that was talking to the no one liked, for some reason, Lou Henson. So he and Knight and Judd Heathcoat and the coach at Iowa whose name escapes me right now, and I should know him. He used that 3-2 zone all
Tom
those
Davis.
Years and was at Boston College. But
Dr. Tom Davis,
right. They all didn't like the way Illinois recruited. And so while I'm saying he was behind it, I don't know that for a fact, but I know everybody talked about what can we do about Illinois. And I'm guessing that that's the way it came down. So it's no more than conjecture on my part, but.
Has time and that game dealt Bruce Pearl a wrong hand? I mean, he's been marked, and they've been watching him, and the NCAA wanted to get him. And my question for you is why?
Well, I don't what you just said. I don't know how factual that is.
Come on,
watching him and everything. I don't think there would have been anything happened to him had he just said, you know, had he been up front with them at the start. I mean, they, at best, they were secondary violations. Unless there's something they've uncovered that I don't know about, and that's certainly possible. But I'm just saying, had he just been up front with the initial interviews, there wouldn't been much come of this, in my experience.
Brownie, you've been great today, and you've given us 40 unbelievable minutes. You're so next level to hang out with. Hey, next year, does UConn, give me the top five teams in women's college basketball next year. You already said A&M is number one.
Saying that they would be considered in that spot.
You
Stanford
said
is still going to be right there near the top. Tennessee is right in your top five, has to be. Baylor, Texas A&M, Stanford, Tennessee, that would be the top four. Connecticut could be five, somewhere in that vicinity. That's an off the top of the head close top five.
Brownie, I thank you. When are you coming back? Because I'm ready to take some of your money. You need to see my new and improved golf swing. I'm tuning the golf ball right now.
I am excited to come back and play golf with you, and we're going to do it this summer instead of talk about it.
Brownie, I love you. Have a great time.
Well, you're the man, and thank you for having me on, and best to everyone in Knoxville.
Great Al Brown, thank you.